The Aces go today. And,
the Aces today, yes.
Yeah, and they're
that's why we're on, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. The second to second to last tune-up. Cole's facing Toronto.
Yeah, you got Toronto. Toronto. Yep.
And and DeGrom is going. He's going to be down at West Palm Beach as they take on the Nationals there. It looks, DeGrom will pitch backfield next time. I'm not sure what they're going to do with Cole because they face Washington again. So,
yeah.
But, it doesn't really matter where he's pitching. He's looked, unstoppable again this year. So, and then Cole has looked pretty good too, for that matter.
Yeah, this is the fun part for us watching these two guys. We kind of dreamed on it a little bit last year, got a little piece of it with, these guys making 12 starts. And here you go now thinking about the idea that there aren't many starters in the game who are going to make 32 starts this year. I've got to think that Cole and DeGrom probably have a really good chance of doing that. And, just because of their history of workload and who they are and just how they look. And this is the fun one because this is probably, about maybe 75 pitches or so for these guys.
Yeah.
And then you scale them back just a little bit and get ready to go. So it's, we're tasting it, man. We're less than 2 weeks out.
Yeah. No, it's, it's interesting. The idea of with Carrasco's injury with the Mets, Sweeney, the idea of a six-man rotation came up. And the thing is that and Luis Rojas, he leaves a lot of things open. He never really says, we haven't even gotten to the point where Edwin Diaz is the closer, even though everybody knows he's going to be the closer. But, and who's who and who slots in where, he leaves everything very open and goes by competition, okay, which is fine.
Yeah.
And you read between the lines a little bit, but he pretty much shot that down right away because when you have a DeGrom and you have a Cole, it's hard to do a six-man rotation. You can't be pushing those guys back. First of all, they don't want to. Second of all, you don't want to because you want them out there every 5 days. Now you can get them an extra day here and there when you have days off, and there's plenty of time in April. I think the Mets have 5 days off, I think, all told, in the month of April, and the Yanks probably have a bunch too.
Yeah.
It'll get tighter after that, but you've got to have those guys out there. What you can do is drop other guys into the rotation and, give a certain pitcher 10 days,
Yes.
Skip a start and give him the 10 days off and get him back into the rotation and help him that way and help him innings-wise, and especially when you get down to the end of the rotation with guys like David Peterson with the Mets who haven't pitched, haven't gone beyond 130 innings in a season at all, and that was a couple of years ago. So, but it was interesting that they kind of shot that down. Openers, he didn't shoot down.
Yeah.
Figuring out other ways to do it, but the six-man rotation, pretty much when you have an ace, it pretty much
exactly
goes by the boards. Yeah.
Exactly right. I mean, when you've got a guy that when you've got a guy like DeGrom, when you've got a guy like Cole, when you've got a guy like Scherzer or any of these other guys, you don't want them pitching less. And that's what a six-man rotation does. And I understand what it means in theory, but you're making your best pitcher pitch fewer games, so you kind of have to maneuver other guys around, and then you're shuffling too many people around, so it becomes a little bit of an issue. But last week you and I spoke to David Cohn on this program, and he said, going back to days when he worked with Mel Stottlemyre, and they weren't dealing with ramping up from a pandemic, they were talking about the idea of rest between starts being just a big factor for them, and being about lengthening the season for them, durability, an extra day here or there, or as you said, skip a turn. These are the kinds of things you're going to see teams do a lot, and we hear about six-man rotations all the time, or the idea of it. When you have a real number one, it makes zero sense because then you're just giving them the ball fewer times.
Yeah, no, I think. I was talking to my buddy Dave Sims the other day.
Yeah.
We were talking about the Seattle rotation because he was asking me about Chris Flexen, who used to pitch.
Used to pitch
with the Mets, and he went over to Korea and pitched well there. And Seattle, actually, I think they signed him to a 2-year deal, actually, which good for him.
Mm-hmm.
But he's in the rotation, but they're going to go with the six man. But it makes sense because they don't have Marco Gonzalez, is that their number one? I guess and they're going to go with a 6-man rotation, and they're a young team, and they're not going to win this year, so it makes sense. I totally get that.
Yeah.
But, you know, they don't have a guy that you can hand the ball to every 5 days and say, go get him, big boy. You know, this stop a losing streak or whatever. So
with the idea of contending like you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that it makes sense for a lot of teams like that. But yeah, it doesn't make sense for other teams, especially with the big guy at the top, you know.
So who is it? There's a, was it Texas that has a Sims and a Coleman? Is that who?
I don't know.
There's a basketball team. There's a basketball team.
Oh, yeah.
One of the college teams.
Well, they're gone. Anyway, yeah, Texas. Texas got Lewis Coleman III, and the Sims on there, too. I think
there's a Sims and a Coleman.
It doesn't matter because Abilene Christian beat them.
Oh, man. How great are those upsets, man?
I know.
That's fantastic.
And, Oral Roberts, the other one with Ohio State. How's your pool? How's your pool doing?
I stopped doing them so long ago because of days this. Yeah, okay. It's just, you know, I don't pick the brackets anymore. I don't watch them as closely during the season. And it just, I mean, you know, I do other things for interest in that. But just picking the bracket, it's funny because I'm wearing a Kansas sweatshirt right now. And I used to, every year, probably from, I don't know, I'd say, like, throughout the entire 1990s and 2000s,
right.
I used to pick Kansas almost every year. I'm like, this is going to be the year. This is going to be the year. And I think the year that they, Syracuse beat Kansas in the final, right? In the Carmelo's year? They beat Kansas. Mm-hmm. That was, right, because Roy Williams, I think that was his last year there. But that was the year that I think I picked Kansas to win. Nobody had picked Syracuse to win, so by the time we got to the championship game, I won my pool, regardless of the outcome, and I sit back, and Kansas still didn't win, but they finally paid off for me. Anyway, I used to pick them forever and ever, and it never worked out. I stopped doing the brackets a long ago because, you know, everyone, you know, at 3 o'clock on the first day of the tournament, everyone said, oh, my pool, my bracket.
I've got a couple. I have one Gonzaga, one Baylor, and
okay.
I didn't even look where. Cause I had some teams knocked out, but speaking of Q's, I was watching them. How about Buddy Boeheim?
Mm-hmm.
God,
yeah,
good Lord, he's doing his best Steve Kerr imitation. Hi, I can shoot threes. Yeah, put me in the next level and put me on the right team, and I'll drain a few for you.
That's the game. I heard a few Jerry McNamara references.
Yeah, a little bigger than Jerry. More size than that, but he can shoot.
That's fun. So, and they play today, right?
They will play today. Yeah, they have to take on West Virginia.
An old school Big East football matchup.
Exactly. And the weird thing is that it's going into Monday too. Like we talked about this last week.
Yeah.
They started Friday, so it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday instead of your traditional Thursday through Sunday. They did the play-in games on Thursday.
And next week I think is the same thing, isn't it? I think Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Oh, really? Okay.
I believe.
Okay. I got you.
So I think the regional finals, the Elite Eight games, are going to be on Monday and Tuesday.
If I saw that
right.
Cool. Well, that's cool.
So yeah, they're stretching that out a little bit differently, and I'm not sure I understand exactly why, but there's plenty of basketball around. The women's tournament starts today,
and the women's tournament starts today, right? And just in case you thought you'd check out from reality, you had a team that got bumped.
VCU, right?
VCU got bumped. That came down. I don't know what I heard it like around 6 o'clock or so. Maybe it happened before then, but
I saw it on the screen last night. You're right. And it's funny too because I hadn't followed a lot of college basketball this year, and I'm looking at some of the records as the matchups are up there. And, you know, you got some teams that, you know, Iona played less than 20 games.
Right.
The other teams have played,
exactly,
like, the almost 30.
Right.
Real inequity there. Really no idea, which makes the bracket even worse to figure out. You don't know who's good right now. You don't know how anybody got here.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you're smartly making out brackets, which I never do, you just kind of wing it and figure out, you know, this team will do this and that, whatever. But this is probably a year where you take the hottest teams you can, you know, coming down the stretch, because you really don't know. You know, like Baylor is a team to win it all, but at the same time, you know, they had a COVID pause for a long time, you know, and they really haven't been the same team since they came back. You know, they looked great yesterday, but that's a game that they should have won easily, so whatever.
Teams in those 10, 11 seed spots that if you'd played a full season, you know, maybe they're maybe they're higher, maybe they're lower. But you don't really know exactly how good they are based on what's happening. But, I mean, the games are still kind of fun to watch. I understand. And I saw something earlier this week somebody wrote, and I think it's true because of just the way the NBA has evolved. Like, the star power in college basketball is gone. You know, you don't have these guys that you're attached to for 2, 3, 4 years at a particular school that you know are the stars of the game. So that's made it a little bit more different to watch. But when you get into these environments, and even with the lesser crowd, you know, small crowd, when you see a 1-point ball game and or a 3-point ball game and there's 10 seconds on the clock, I mean, it's, you know, this is what you kind of live for this time of year.
Yeah, no, there's no question. Listen, to me anyway, because I mean, I love the sport and played it a long time, but you watch the NBA game and it's a totally different game now with just, you know, the threes galore. It's just, it's not the same. You watch the college game and it's different. Yeah, they shoot threes. Yeah, of course they do. You get it. And three over two. Everybody understands that, but it's still a different game. And it's, you know, there's still penetration to the hoop and, you know, there's still more basketball, I guess, than what you see in the NBA. That's to me.
Yeah,
it's more fun, you know, to watch. That's why I think it's kind of exciting at this time of year.
And it's fun too to watch. You know, these kids are still, I mean, they're fantastic athletes, but at times you see the game speed up a little bit, even for these guys, and you recognize how young they are. And I forget which game it was. Watched the other day. You know, the guy took a three. He didn't need a three, and it was a bad shot. And it, you know, but he rushed up a three and a bad shot. It's like, you know, you had another second. He was coming down the court. You had another second to get a 5 feet closer, you know, and maybe make a better shot. And it's funny to watch those and see, you know, even these guys who are elite athletes and they've played highest level of competition, they get in this moment, and maybe that, you know. And it still gets away from them a little bit.
Yeah, it was interesting, too. The first game that they had, Florida and Virginia Tech, all right, that was like noontime on Friday that tipped off or whatever. And it came to – Florida won in overtime, and they had a 3-point lead. And they
hit the three.
Virginia Tech hit the three. And I forget who was doing the game, whatever. He said, they should foul. You should foul here.
Right.
You know, and not let them take the three. But nobody ever does.
No.
It happens time and time and time again, over and over. And you know they had time to foul him too, coming over half court.
Yes.
They had time to foul him, get him to the line. Didn't do it. Takes a three. Bingo. Overtime. Now Florida won it overtime, so it didn't kill him. But you know it's little things like that, and you go, wow. Yeah, will they ever learn?
I threw off my kids that day because that was, as you said, it was the first game, I'm over in the kitchen. The TV's on. I'm trying to get them into watching a little bit of, and they're not. And I forget what I was doing. I was fixing a snack or something. And I looked up and I just went, oh, he tied it, and I had no idea what was going on.
One other thing, the game today, Illinois and Loyola Chicago, the first game today. But I was amazed at this. I didn't see it going in. Sister Jean. Remember her?
Mm-hmm.
She's 101.
I had no idea she was that old. Yeah.
She's still kicking. I thought that was great.
She's up there rooting them on. That's
the
fantastic.
Ramblers. Yeah.
Hey, as long as we're talking college basketball, we should probably mention a little college baseball because our buddy Al Leiter had an amazing day yesterday when his son Jack. It's all over Twitter if people are on it, but if you don't know what we're talking about, Jack Leiter at Vanderbilt threw a no-hitter yesterday and struck out 16 batters do it. A full, a 9-inning no-hitter, you know, not a 7-inning job or anything like that.
When he said, got the last 27 outs, right?
He walked the first batter,
okay.
Yeah. And then 27 in a row, and, you know, it was just, I was talking to Al about 2 weeks ago, and we were talking about some stuff, and all of a sudden I said, hey, how's, you know, what's it like watching Jack? How do you watch Jack? Like, what's, you know,
you're
a fan, a dad? But he said, it's a great question. He said, he charts the games. So it gives him something to do. I think it kind of, you know, it may sound like it kind of takes away some of the nerves, but really all he wants to do is he wants to watch him have fun, and he wants him to be happy, you know, and you know, he helps him be better at it. Well, watching that yesterday and the idea of, like, he talks pitching with his son all the time because he can. And he and the thing that stuck with me, Eddie, is when he said, you know, I just wanted to be happy, you know, and you kind of feel that like when you think about your own kids. And he's watching his son, who's going to be a first round pick, you know, and
maybe the number one,
maybe number one overall,
possibly.
And he's eligible. Like, he was only drafted 2 years ago, but he turns 21 in April, so he's eligible this year, correct?
Yes, yeah, absolutely,
So I mean, it was amazing to see. His arm is amazing.
I heard him talking, Jack. I don't know when, it was a little while ago, but he was, you know, talking about that Al. Even when going back to like when he was two, mm-hmm. he'd have a ball in his hand. Okay, you know, he'd give him even like a Nerf ball, you know, just a throw or, you know, a squeeze, whatever. But he had a ball in his hand all the time, and that you know, I'm sure it grew from there. And he was probably doing bullpens at four.
Yeah,
but you know, it's great. You know, he's a righty too. He's not a lefty.
Yeah,
like Al, he's a right-hander. But it's great. You know, it's great to see that. I kind of remember Jack a little bit, you know, when he was younger, like, you know, seeing him around the ballpark mm-hmm. and that. But it had to be, it's got to be great for Al. I mean, it's got to be a great feeling.
Yeah. You know, I mean, like, think about, well, he was, let's see, Jack was born in 2000, so I don't know if they crossed, I don't think they crossed paths. Pat Mahomes was on the Mets in 99, but not 2000, right?
99, yeah, I don't think he was there 2000, yeah.
So, I mean, think about, you know, Patrick Mahomes, Jack Leiter, you know,
exactly.
There's... You know, I know we thought there was some funny stuff in the, you know, like the, you know, in the pipes at Shea Stadium, but man, there was something happening there.
You want to feel old too? There you go. You want to feel old. I remember watching little Patrick Mahomes, you know, in his uniform all the time, and he'd be out there throwing with his dad along the first baseline prior to games and that. Talk about feeling old.
That's fantastic. But I mean, I just gotta listen, and I didn't become a father until I was 40, right? So I'm 50 now. So I feel all these things that people are talking about when you sit there and you just watch the games differently, because now the people who are performing are, you know, half my age. They're old enough to be my children, and you kind of think of it, they're closer in age to my children than they are to me. And it just hits you kind of differently. And I really felt great for Al because of a conversation I had with him 2 weeks ago, thinking about, you know, what he was able to watch yesterday. And, you know, we exchanged a couple of messages, and, you know, I hope maybe we have time to – I think he might be flying or something like that, but we might try to check in with him.
Yeah, it'd be great if we can hook up on it today. Before we take a break, Joe Mack is going to join us, Joe McEwing, of course, is going to join us, and third base coach now with the White Sox.
Third base coach was the Chicago White Sox, yeah.
And Tony La Russa now managing there. But I wanted to mention, I know you couldn't see it because the game wasn't televised, but Matt Harvey yesterday. Matt, it looked pretty good, actually.
Pitched, you know, well.
For the Orioles. I guess he gave up a Gio home run. I think that was it in four innings. So, yeah, listen, I hope Matt seems to have turned a corner personally. I think he's come to grips with what happened and you know, what went wrong. And hopefully he can get back on track. That was good to see, though, yesterday.
There's a lot happening. And he had, you know, he had the thoracic outlet, too, right?
Yes.
On top of
Tommy John came back from Tommy John on a year, he probably should have taken it easy.
Yeah.
But that was 2015.
Right.
Remember? And I still remember, you know, sitting down in Miami in September, and that whole, you know, the Boris thing, you know, we have an innings limit or whatever, and, you know, Harvey kind of towed the line there, but, you know, shortly after said, you know, I'm pitching, you know, I'm going to go through and pitch, and it's a tough situation, you know, that's something I think a lot of Met fans sometimes forget, but they, you know, there was some sacrifice there, you know, you had to consider that, you know, for the betterment, you know, you probably said, okay, that's enough. You know, I pitched enough innings. He went, I think it was 215 all told with the
postseason World Series.
I mean 215 with the postseason, but that's a lot of innings coming back from Tommy John. So who knows?
And you end up Phil Hughes had the thoracic outlet, and that's something that, you know, it's just really hard to come back from. You add on the Tommy John, everything else. He's kind of put himself through some things too. Yesterday was his third official spring training start, and the first two didn't go great. But he only allowed the one hit yesterday, the homer to Urshela, and I think he walked one, struck out two. I think, you know, he's he got through four, you know, and pitched well against the, you know, it wasn't the A lineup, but, you know, there's still, you know, you're talking about this late in spring training, you're facing some good hitters, and he's got a chance to do something there. We'll see if he has a chance to do something with the Orioles.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen the Baltimore rotation, but I got to figure he's got a pretty good shot.
Yeah.
If he continues to pitch well, I would think that he's,
I mean, they brought Harvey and Felix Hernandez in on minor league contracts in Baltimore.
Right,
and, I mean, it's not a good team. And, you know, listen, we might get a chance to see a lot of those guys if, you know, Yankees-Orioles is the second series of the year.
Okay.
And then not again till sometime in May, looks like. But, you know, 18, 19 games a year against the Orioles, it's never usually a lot of fun. those are some really wacky games sometimes because the Orioles are just bad. But, hey, listen, if Harvey can make it back and have just a little bit of a different, you know, you never want it to end the way it was looking like it was going to end. And if he has a little bit of a comeback here, it'd be kind of nice to see.
Yeah, that was good to see.